Euphoria Season 2, Episode 8, Finale, All My Life, My Heart Has Yearned for a Thing I Cannot Name. What an episode title. Is over, but we're just getting started. My name is Grace. I'm here with my co-host, Amon. Hi, Amon.
We did it. We did it. It took a lot of emotional tolls along the way. I feel like at least 3 minutes of my life has been taken away from by this show. I'm going to be on my deathbed, and hopefully my great-grandchildren are going to be surrounding me. I'm going to be saying my last goodbyes, and then I'm going to need that last 3 minutes. I'm going to be like, Euphoria! And then
hopefully, hopefully you're not on your deathbed like Fezco's grandmother while there's like
Hopefully my deathbed is a lot more peaceful than that. But it's been a long ride. It's been a tough journey. And whether or not you're satisfied, there's varying opinions on that. But I'm glad to talk about it once more in debrief.
Yeah, so, this play, I think some good, some some unresolved storylines. We're going to talk through it, but we are not alone. Of course, we are joined today by the great Mari. Hi, Mari.
Giddy up. Let's go. I'm excited. I'm excited to be here to talk Euphoria with you guys. The finale. Wow. I'm so glad, Grace. Thank you for reaching out to me to be on here. This season has been a roller coaster, and listening to you guys talk about it has been the highlight of it. Cause I really needed to get my thoughts together after many of these episodes. So I'm glad I can come on and do it in person with you guys instead of just
This show throws a lot at us. We have to figure it out, Like Sam Levinson has some stuff going on in his brain that we have to try and decipher. So did you enjoy, we'll get into episode 8, but everything leading up to it, season 2?
Yeah, the season, when I think back on the season, it's kind of weird. It feels like there was an ebb and flow, but then it does feel like there was an episode or two there where you're like, okay, not much is going on. And then it kind of hit the ground running. And I want to know, I guess, from you guys, it's like this season feels way more surreal than last season did, but maybe I just am not remembering correctly because you guys binged it again, from what I understand, because y'all did the kickoff show. I did not, so I'm going off of trying to remember what happened 2 years ago, but it didn't seem as surreal as this one did, and especially in this last episode. But some of it almost lost. It kept taking me out of some of the moments a little bit.
Yeah, what do you think, Amon?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's definitely a heightened sense of reality when it comes to Euphoria Season 2, just the way that most things are shot. I mean, it's always been artsy-fartsy. I think that's the term that I love to use when it comes to Euphoria, because Sam Levinson and the rest of the team really like to film this show in ways that just hyper focus on details about the characters and the way that it's shot and everything, the colors, the imagery that is used, definitely all up in there. Okay. These people went to art school and they want us to know that they went to art school. Okay. It's great. Definitely more of that in season 2. And I think a lot of that sort of lends itself to the writing style this time around as well. Mm. I kept seeing the critique pretty much all season long that season 2 of Euphoria does not have a plot. While I would not go as far to say that, I would say that, yes, there definitely was more of a linear path in season 1. Things felt a little bit more grounded. And while every episode did focus on a different character, everything did coalesce into a larger plot line. Whereas I felt like with this one, the plot lines were sort of more
shifting in a sense.
Yeah, shifty. And they didn't.
Parallel.
I also feel like they're very self-referential. A lot of times the show takes, it's like season 4. Okay, now we're going to do the recap episode. This is like, the storyline is Lexi is writing a play and everything that happened in season 1, it's like, okay, all right. Yeah, really putting it on, I think he really loves his work, Sam Levinson. He's like, not only am I going to write a show about it, I'm going to write a show where they do a play about all the stuff that I wrote. So I think that's the surrealness a bit to me, the Nate stuff, I think, has always felt like it pushes the line of is this really a teen high school drama? They were barely in high school this season. Like, we barely see them in high school this whole season. So, like, yeah, I think it feels like sometimes these shows do this. I say this a lot, where, like, a show starts with a simple premise, and then they have to, like, you know, a lot of times this is, like, prestige dramas where they, like, have to break open the, like, the like, thing of the world, to, and it's, like, suddenly about the whole world. And I feel a little bit like it was sort of this small, intimate drama about, like, relationships and, like, Rue's relationship with Jules in first season, and, you know, Kat's, you know, relationship to her own body. You had, like, the Nate, Maddie stuff. It's horrible, but, you know, it's relationship drama. And then this feels like it just, like, everything, like, you know, drug dealers in the world. You know, they were drug dealers in season one, but... Yeah, there's ways in which this, the world feels bigger than it did, I think, in season one.
I mean, I feel like the drug selling, drug abuse storyline really was more of the centerpiece of this episode, with like a sprinkle, or of this season rather, with like a sprinkle of Cal in there as well. We learned so much more about Cal. And Fezco was really just, I think, probably the breakout for this season. And we got to see probably the most culmination and the most payoff, even if it's a sad payoff. We saw the most payoff with him and Ashtray in this episode, as opposed to some of these other storylines that sort of just, like, go by the wayside, or they get wrapped up in a way that doesn't really feel like it should have been wrapped up that way, because of all of the winding up that happened throughout the season.
Or not wrapped up at all.
So I totally understand.
You left my gift just totally unwrapped here on the table.
Yeah. I totally understand why there are so many people that are feeling not satisfied with this ending. And let's just go ahead and say it. Like, for those of us that have been waiting to see if there would be some sort of, like, you know, comeuppance with the way that Kat's character has been handled this season, you were still left for wanting. If you really wanted more from the whole Maddie versus Cassie thing, you still were kind of left wanting for that. It just did not. And also, Jules, like, you were kind of left wanting
the
for
Jules erasure. Come on.
It was real. Y'all talked about it last week, and I was like, that's a great point. And
this is weird love triangle stuff between Jules and Elliot and Rue, and it's all, like, wrapped up in addiction and identity. And I was like, this is good. This is really good. And then the second half of the season, they're like, but also, no, you can't have that little treat. I'm not going to give it to you. Like, I think that stuff where, like, when Elliot is, like, fawning over Jules a bit, like, when they're, like, I thought that stuff was so good. The, like, the interrogation scene of Elliot. I feel like the start of the season was working. And it just feels like he had this idea, Sam Wilson, about this play that he was going to put on that totally upended everything he wanted to do. I feel like you said Fez is the breakout of season two. I think Lexi is, like, I don't know if the breakout, but, like, I think Sam Levinson, like I did after season one, fell in love with Lexi, the character, and was like, we're going to fix this, and had this, like, big idea to bring Lexi in. I love a lot of the stuff between Lexi and Rue. I feel like a lot of the time, basically for a season and a half, we're like, are they best friends? Like, Cassie's, like, yelling, like, why are you friends with Lexi? And we're like, I don't think they are friends. And we get this really great story of, like, why they're friends. Rue can relate to Lexi and about her relationship with her dad in a way that none of her other friends can do. Like, you know, her dad is an addict. Rue is an addict and sort of can, like, explain what's happening to Lexi in a way that nobody else can provide her. It's really beautiful stuff. But, like, I just feel like this whole play thing was to put Lexi in this huge moment at the expense of so many other characters on the show.
I would definitely agree. Yeah, Jules got one line, like, just one line this whole episode, and the ambiguity of the ending. And I think we can't not talk about not feeling satisfied while also knowing that the next season doesn't come for another 2 years. So that doesn't help. It really is sad, because I agree that the first half felt like build. We got, what was that, episode 5 was when Rue did her mad dash, and then it just felt like off track ever since then. It never felt like anything was resolved. And it makes you think how they said that Sam Levinson will sometimes like rewrite stuff. I mean, allegedly, I don't know. We don't know.
Yeah.
You know, rewrite stuff on set while they're filming. It's kind of like, maybe we can tell. Maybe we can tell that's what happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes you wonder, like, do some side characters just need to remain on the side? Like, maybe not everybody can get their star treatment to
this have. This is kind of Cassie's point when she jumps on the stage. Like, you're just a bystander, Lexi.
Yeah, sometimes maybe, you know, maybe she was on to something. Maybe it's like, Lexi, shut up. Ain't nobody talking to you. Sit back so that we can focus on the beef that I have with Maddie and so that we can focus on what Rue's got going on. And I don't know, maybe there is room for everyone. Maybe there's just that we just don't like the way that Sam chose to wrap everything up in this. So I think the play was a wonderful plot device. I don't know if I needed two episodes of it.
Yeah,
it's only halfway over, and I was like, "What teacher is letting this play continue? Where are the adults? We don't need the second half of the play. We just don't."
I literally yelled, "Where are the adults?"
We
ran up stage.
I agree with you. I think that the plot, the using the play as this moment for like Lexi to make a bad decision to like take control of her life, and who cares if it like, you know, if she hurts people along the way, I think it's totally fine. There is no fallout from that whatsoever in this episode. There's also no fallout from anything to do with Lexi and Fesco in this episode. We like literally never see Lexi learn that like someone she loves is also just gonna be gone out of her life. And so I just feel like, I don't know, it's not who he chose, it's that I will say, I do think the Rue stuff, like if I like don't care that like Jules wasn't really involved, if I don't, you know, if I like am setting everything else aside from this episode, I really actually love like Rue's storyline this whole season. I have a big issue with like Lori just like being like, well, I guess I was gonna sell her into slavery, but I am, you know, never mind. Phew, she got out the window. So oops. Other than that, I really love it. Rewatching it, I think I was really upset when Jules the moment at the end. But I do think like Rue has this really lovely, I think the idea like is just, you know, trying to be and pretending to be a good person. Can that just mean you could be a good person? I think it's really, I don't know. I actually think a lot of that stuff is beautiful. I just wish he sort of like gave the same attention and care to every other storyline and like wrapped them up in a way that felt more satisfying. Cause I feel like this season was like setting off a firework and you're like, oh, this is going to be a good one. Like, you know, you're like, oh, it's going to light it. And he lights it and it goes up in the air and it like looks like it's going to be so cool. And then it just doesn't do anything. It's just like, it's one of the fizzle ones, you know? It's kind of how I feel about this season. So
I just feel like maybe it's a bit of I think I've made this comparison the other time, like just a little bit of Ryan Murphy energy going on where it starts off great and then there's just so many shiny objects and shiny characters and things that interest him as a writer and director, things that he wants to explore, and he gets so hyper fixated on one aspect of a character and really driving that plot development home that everything else sort of just flounders in, you know, in the middle of it all. And the next thing you know, when you try to swoop back around to take care of everything else, it's sort of just like it's too much to handle at once, and then you're just left wanting for so much. Because that Lori plot line, I mean, I'm sorry, like I 2 years from now, I'm not gonna care as much. Like,
very true.
Am I gonna watch Euphoria season 3? Of course I am. But like, I just feel like that's just such a missed opportunity to sort of have at least some mention of it, like something, because now it's just going to be like, okay, so is all of season 3 just going to be about how she has to pay her back? It's like, well, we could have handled that this season, but no, it's very
like,
strange.
I thought that they did some good stuff like last episode where like Leslie's kind of like, listen, you do you, like, I you know, like you've made a lot of, you know, you kind of like put a lot on my plate, so I'm going to take it off my plate. I feel like it was like a good way of showing how it affects family. I feel like they, you know, kind of as soon as Rue had her, you know, what I would call now her rock bottom, which one of the things I was saying is that like there's not often these rock bottom moments, right? Like they're kind of like tropey, and yet the show is like, well, it's gonna have a rock bottom moment, because basically everything after that, everything we saw in this season, she's sober and clean. It's great. And that does not mean that she will stay sober forever. And then that's not hard to, it's not hard to do. Like, it is, sorry, it is hard to do. It is hard to stay sober, right? But I feel like the other thing that happens as part of like, is like, you sort of have to like figure out how to like move on and like, you know, you did bad things. And I feel like there's some of that in the Lexi Rue conversation, yeah. But there's this huge storm cloud over this, like, of like, you stole drugs from a really, really bad person. And I feel like Sam wanted that moment of her like hitting rock bottom, being stuck in the house, and that like horror scene, horror movie vibe. And then as soon as that was done, as soon as he like got what he got out of the storyline, he's like, that's it. That's it. I'm done with it. Without thinking like, how can I actually like wrap this up? Like, you could have looped it into something with Fez. Fez ended up in a pretty bad situation this season, you know?
That's what I was worried about too. I was like, because I feel like it needs to be addressed, or we're all just going to be sitting here like, when is the other shoe going to drop? Because her just escaping definitely doesn't satisfy that storyline for me, because no drug dealer is going to be like, oh, she escaped, okay, whatever. Like, she has all those goons. Like,
she still owes money. She's like, you still have to pay me the rest of the money.
Yes. So it's either he's like, okay, we can deal with that later, or and forgot about it, or it's just like, so like Amon said, we're going to go into season 3 with that hanging over our heads, and either we're not going to care by that time because our anxiety is not going to be as high as it was for the last 3 episodes, or we're just going to be like, okay, like, I don't know. I just wish they would have incorporated it. And I thought in that first scene that was exactly what was going to happen, but it didn't.
I thought when the door was coming down, I thought Lori's boyfriend's going to show up. Not that it wouldn't actually be the FBI, but anyway. We have a big episode to get through. Let's actually take a commercial break now, and when we come back, we will dive into the full episode. Okay. Let's dive into the episode. We are back. Fez is going to leave the house to head to the play. But Custer tells him he needs to talk before he goes. Says the cops have found Mouse's body. At that moment, Faye drops a glass. This is Faye really showing up in the finale. Give big props to anybody. Faye gestures to Fez not to talk. And Faye starts getting up being like, you told me that like Lori killed that guy. This is great. Fez is like trying to tell him not to talk, but Ashtray stabs Custer in the neck. Ashtray, stop. We did see this. We saw this guy the whole time. The beginning of the season is just, when is Ashtray going to kill somebody else? He killed Mouse in episode 1, and then he's just like, is pulling guns out of cereal boxes. He's got this like X-Acto knife. Like, we knew he was going to kill somebody. This makes sense that it's Custer.
I definitely wanted to ask you guys, because the fan reaction, so especially on Twitter, was very, I was like, are we watching the same show? So I wanted to ask you guys, do you think this was out of character for Ashtray? Because people were saying like, that doesn't make sense. Ashtray is he's like a genius. He wouldn't have just killed him right then and there, knowing he was informant. Like, this was out of character.
He didn't know he was an informant. He hit that guy. He already hit that guy in the face with a hammer. Of course he would kill him.
That's what I was saying. I was like, am I confused? Because I saw that coming a mile away, and I thought that fit with everything we've been shown from the season. But some people, they were really mad about this decision, and they felt like him doing everything else was out of character, and they don't think that was something.
I have a moment that feels out of character for Ashtray, but come on, what do you think in this moment, him killing Custer?
I mean, out of character, I'm like, he's 12. Like, I feel like
a young man.
I feel like you're still developing character at that age, and I think we're all very impulsive as children. Mm-hmm. And for someone who to have grown up in such a high stakes environment, where there is guns and violence all around you, of course your propensity for violence is going to be astronomical. And maybe astronomical. And maybe he didn't even really mean to kill Miles. Maybe he just meant to like incapacitate him and get his ass up out of there at some point. Maybe that was a mistake. And even if it wasn't, like, I mean, he's a kid who thinks that all he can think about is, we got to protect each other. Like, you're like, I mean, Fezco is his only friend. He doesn't have any other friends. Ash doesn't go to school. He doesn't have any other projects. His entire life is Fezco and protecting the house and his grandmother, his adoptive grandmother, and that's his business. That's it. Mm-hmm. So anything that comes in between him and those things has to go. So yeah, for the moment that we saw him kill Miles, like you said before, it's like, when is it going to happen again? Well, so we knew what was going to happen.
We've seen him grabbing weapons. He's like, when Cal is in the shop, he's like pulling a gun out of a cereal box.
Yeah, and like he busted Cal over the head 10,000 times, like a watermelon. Like, I didn't think he was violent. Like,
when Fed said, told him to stop, you know, so that's what I said. I was really confused at some of the reaction I saw. I was like, this is right up the alley. And, you know, unfortunately, this is where it was going to end.
Yeah.
For Ashtray,
So then we get these flashbacks of like Fez and Lexi, more telephone talk. They're talking about Fez is going to live on a farm, like Little House on the Prairie. Lexi has a whole plan. She's gonna have three kids and map them out so that she can be like 58 when the last one goes off to college. And they get really into it. They're talking about not having social media and how Fez says, I want to learn about things from people like the old fashioned way, getting to know them. Mm-hmm. And, she says, well, we have things in common, we're both empaths and all this stuff. And he says, yeah, those are like real character traits. Those are stuff that people post online. I thought this was really sweet. I thought this it's very sad because watching it again, we will also know like Fezco is going to prison. I thought this was a nice moment.
Yeah, it was very sad too. It was nice, but it was sad knowing what was happening. But it was just so cute. It just reminds you of just like being in high school, talking on the phone with your crush, and you know them being kind of opposites and how they react to stuff. And it was a moment. It was such a cute moment. But we knew it. We knew it wasn't gonna work. I was so sad.
Yeah, I mean, Alexi. Yeah, the men in her life have not.
Yeah, all been the Howards. Great. Not great at picking men.
Oh, no.
Not at all.
Yeah. So we jump back to the play. Cassie is breathing through the window. She is going to storm the stage. I love this, where they get on the stage and people are so confused about whether this is part of the play or not. And so Suze tries to get up and stop Cassie. There's this one moment that this background actress who does this one line read where Maddie starts being like, yeah. And she's like sleeping with Marta going to be in the, Hallie stealing Jake or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so he's like, wait, why did he steal Jake? Asking questions, like it's so interested in the drama, but asking it in a way that is like so polite. Like this game, I loved that. Whoever that person was, A+ performance.
I liked when Cassie was like, oh, Lexi's life is so hard. Oh, not like women in Afghanistan who get their heads cut off. And so I was like, that's racist. That's I was racist. Like, thank you.
There was some good audience. Really? Chirp. Like, Cassie's yelling at Lexi, like, you've never lived, that's why you can judge everyone else. Maddie and Cassie get in a fight. They try to start the carousel scene, and Cassie's like, no way are we doing the carousel scene, rips her off. Maddie runs on stage, and then they all fight before running off stage. Boy,
I mean, I think every party is guilty here. I mean,
yes,
you gotta think, like, if your little sister writes a play airing all of your dirty laundry, like, and it's not even like it's veiled, it's so plainly simple that these are supposed to be modeled after real people. So it's like, and then you include the scene in which she goes to town on a pony, it's like, come on. Like, of course, I mean, Cassie is already unstable, but that was just going to push her over the edge. So, Lexi, you didn't need to go as far as you did. You could have made this play so much. There's a way. There's a way, Lexi.
Write about the stuff that happens in their life all the time. They don't, like, make it this obvious, you know?
Yes, exactly. There is a way to have you heard of the metaphor. Like, it is a wonderful plot device. It's a wonderful literary device. Please use it sometime.
So what did y'all feel about like the tense moments like interspersed with like the background people? I loved the stage manager and
stage manager guy. I feel like Bobby kind of got like sidelined. There's this new stage manager who just like, is this play?
And Bobby's she like, said, I'm gonna throw up.
Yeah, like I and there's someone comes in like, what do I do? And she's like, I don't know, just go away.
I was cracking up every time they went back to them, but it did. I was like, okay, but also I kind of want to see Maddie beat Cassie up. So it was a really weird juxtaposition, but I was cracking up. I was like, they are me. I am them. What is happening?
We see them like run backstage. There is this moment, I think at some point, where like Maddie does like chuck Cassie's head into the wall. Yeah. Like she does. I just feel like, yeah, they in the same way that they foreshadowed, like Ashtray's going to kill someone. I feel like they foreshadowed Maddie's going to beat somebody up. And I thought like this was leading to like the actual fight, because I feel like there's a little this is basically the resolution to the Maddie Cassie storyline. We'll get one more scene with them later, and right. This is it. And I feel like you need it felt so like, oh, they're running away, okay, and they're fighting, you know, like we're at such a distance where I want it to be like, show me them fighting, and then like realizing that they're idiots for fighting, you know. I just think like I don't know, it felt pretty inconclusive to me. It feels like they're like kind of friends by the end, even though I don't think that's exactly right, but it just feels loose, Amon.
Because what did you guys think? Oh, I'm sorry. But like, what did you guys think about, did y'all see like the after episode when Alexa Demi was saying like Maddie had probably resolved herself not to really put hands on Cassie because she felt like kind of like more hurt than anything. And then I believe that. I thought like, okay, Maddie, they're just going to freeze her out and, you know, they'll keep it moving. But I guess the moment Cassie was up there talking big,
you know. She's the one who brings up like, is the scene where I steal the boyfriend in here? And she's like, no,
exactly. She brings Maddie said, somebody got to put her down. And like, she run up. So yeah. And that's why I guess, you know, in the further scenes that, it was very inconclusive, but I truly kind of think that Maddie hadn't planned on getting violent, but she did.
I think so too. I think I said that last week. I was like, I think she's just, I mean, we saw it in that scene where she chases her all the way up to her bathroom and Cassie locks herself in there.
Yes.
And she just breaks down and she's just like, I can't believe that you would do this. Like it's not even like, because we have seen Maddie get violent, and if she wanted to bust down that door, I'm sure she could have. But at that point, she was just like, "This is really Cassie, really." And then we got to see her watch Cassie and Nate walk down the hallway, thinking that they're like fucking Beyonce and Jay-Z or some shit. And they're just like, "Okay, like so, this is what you're gonna do? Like this is the life that you want to lead? Like this is ridiculous." So I think Maddie at that point was fully prepared to just sort of like let this girl embarrass herself as much as possible, especially considering what Nate literally just did to her to get that tape. She's like, oh, if you want him like that, all right, I'm gonna let you have this. I'm gonna let you learn this lesson on your own. But now when she is ruining the last little bit of enjoyment that she can get out of it, this cathartic play, it's like, oh, okay, now you're fucking up my cable now. So I'm gonna get off the television set. Before I beat your ass.
Yeah, because Cassie's been pretty like quiet. Like, I mean, she was at school with Nate and like, you know, with him. Yeah. But for the most part, like, she's, you know, has not like in this. She's like, you want me to like, I'm supposed to play the role of the villain. I'll play the role of the villain, right? I think that's the moment where Maddie's like, okay, enough.
You're like enough.
Yeah, you want to play the sad little. I'll let you play that role, but you're not going to play the like.
Yeah,
you know, stand up, you know, be the villain thing.
And don't,
you know,
ruin this play for me. This play is wonderful.
Yeah,
and everybody was like, "Oh, I thought you were crazier." She running around the set away from Maddie. I thought she was crazier.
Yeah, so they run off. They go off stage. Suze, I love her. She's like, "My daughter's a genius. Can you believe this is all scripted? My daughter's a genius." And they close the curtain. Rue looks back at Elliot. We get this flashback for a few days prior where she goes to visit him. You know, he says, yeah, I just came to like, what does she say? I came to like, you know, call you out for being a snitch or whatever. Mm-hmm. You effed up. But actually she's there to forgive him, thinks that if like they don't meet and they aren't part of each other's lives, that, you know, she probably doesn't survive. And she says she doesn't have a lot of people that she actually gets to forgive. She has a lot of people she needs to say I'm sorry to. She hasn't talked to Jules. Elliot plays her a song. A full song.
They was mad.
Ate him up for this song, yo. Like,
you know what? I liked it. My one critique is like he plays a full song, like it's fully written. He just goes, "Yeah, I'm just still haven't figured it out yet." Like, you absolutely have. You have the full song. You're gonna drop this song in an album tomorrow on Monday.
I'm not gonna lie. I couldn't tell you what the song was about because I was watching this morning. I wasn't able to watch last night, mm-hmm. But I did watch this morning as I was getting ready for work, and so I did take that moment while he was singing to like hurry up and like do things that I needed to do. So
do you know what they wanted? I think it's not necessarily that they like, I think there was a little bit of like, Dominic Fike, you're a singer, do you want to come on the show? He's like, can I do a song? He's like, okay, you can do a song. They also wanted like 2.5 minutes of full-on sad Zendaya face acting, I think, as well. With some of this, like,
because the people, everybody loved Zendaya singing at the end of the episode. Yeah. But when it came to Dominic, they were like, nah, get that shit off my screen.
They were mad. Yeah. And I liked the song, and finding out that Zendaya and Lab wrote it was like really nice to hear. And Dominic, he played the mess out of it. And again, on the rewatch, it was stuck in my head. I was legit singing it to myself, like getting ready for the podcast. So
true, I mean, I love about their friendship, and you know how you
it's
know
so cute, it's, yeah,
you lost you to the wind. It's good. I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now do I understand that people are upset that you allocated 3 minutes to this when we got no Cat, no Jules, true, and maybe an unsatisfying Maddie and Cassie storyline? Okay. I can see that. You know, I can see why people could be mad about
We're all upset about the Jules eraser from the season. But let me say, if there's one silver lining that came out of this entire season, Hunter Schaefer got Dominic Fike out of this whole mess. So, you know, doing pretty well, Hunter Schaefer, I think. Elliot asks to play Truth or Dare. Rue says Truth. Mm-hmm. Says, do you think we could still be friends? And they kind of both agree that they are not good for each other.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt, but I have a question. Does Rue, like, know about Elliot and Jules, or is it implied?
I don't think so.
It's unclear, but I sort of get the vibe that it's like it doesn't matter at this point because of all
she's
of
not,
the
she's
stuff.
Not with Jules, and she's not with that. She's not with
right. Elliot. She's not with either of them. She still hasn't been able to bring herself to say I'm sorry to Jules. So even if Jules were to say, by the way, I fucked Elliot, I think Zendaya would probably, or Zendaya. I think Rue would probably be like, okay, I deserve that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so yeah, it's unclear. I mean, I would like to think that yes, in the back of her mind, there has to be like the thought, because like if Elliot found himself so close enough to Jules to tell her, by the way, me and Rue have been doing drugs, she's been lying to you, then maybe there's like a thought pattern from Rue that's like, oh, so you guys have been spending a lot of time together, what y'all doing, y'all fucking? Because I know y'all like each other. So yeah, unclear, but maybe a little unresolved implication. Yeah,
I mean, I think like another we're like that, to me, that story is interesting, the love triangle. I know it's a little tropey, but it's not really true. It's like a trans woman, and he, you know, he is, I don't know. And so like I kind of, you know, and so for it to be unresolved again, I feel like, okay, all right, we're not tying things up, but that's fine. That's fine. I do like because there's so much of like the first one of the first things they say to each other, it's just like, I'm not sure this is good that we met, you know, like this, and that came up again. And so I do like this, like that they both kind of leave, I'm like, yeah, we probably shouldn't be friends. It'd probably be harder for me to stay clean if we
exactly are. And the song kind of implied that just maybe one day they could be friends, keep the door open for them to be friends later down the road. Sad.
So Lexi is crying on stage. Bobby comes up to her, consoles her, says it could be worse, it could have been boring. She says, how many shows have started a riot? And art should be dangerous. Rue gets a Lexi chant going, which I thought was pretty cute. And they're gonna restart the show. It's great. The show must go on, Lexi says. Yeah.
Yes, it must. That's number one rule of theater, baby.
That's right. Never. Well, I do have questions for whoever is the authority at this Euphoria.
Oh, yeah, no. This show in particular might not need to go on. But in other senses of the word, yes.
Is everybody sitting in their seats being like, well, it's probably going to restart, right? Like, nobody gets out of their seat to be like, I think the show's over. I think
it's they're like, I'm
over.
Staying here for this. This is some good shit.
I was so invested.
I thought I came here for Oklahoma and got, like, Real House students of Euphoria High. So.
Well, a show that's not going well. Fez walks over to Ashtray. He hits Ashtray. This is I didn't quite understand. I can't tell if he hits him because he's like, why did you stab that guy? Or he's kind of saying like, we're going to cover this up. We're going to figure it out. I got to make it look like you didn't do this. I'm wondering if this is like somebody hits Ashtray. And so whatever. He's like, you got to get out of here. I'm going to do it. He gives us like, it's emotional. It's like tough. And being like, listen, like I'm going to go down anyway. So we might as well like make sure you don't go down. And I'll just say that I killed Custer. He's like, you need to get out of here. Go get your stuff. Run. And Ashtray gets the guns and ammo out of the dryer and gets in the bathroom in the tub. Like, what are you doing? But come on, this is dumb. What a dumb thing to do, Ashtray. Brutal.
Look. I know that there are a lot of people that are upset about this.
Yes.
I know that a lot of people I've seen all the people have been holding a memorial service for him all day on Twitter today.
Yes.
And I understand it. I get it. But at some point, your morality has to step in here and you have to think, what is the proper punishment for someone who has just killed two people? Even if they are drug. And no, not even two at this point, because it'll end up being three. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
What is the proper punishment for someone who does that in cold blood? And if people don't even
probably
like that,
probably juvie, probably, you know,
I mean, sure. But I just think realistically, I mean, yeah, we can let this play at this high school run until the cows come home. But the one thing that I think that we need to keep in reality is the fact that this kid just shot a SWAT member in the chest.
So
it's just like, what else was going to happen? And if you don't like that simple explanation, I mean, I think, look, Ash, like I said, his life has been nothing but drugs, guns, money, and ashtrays, okay?
Yeah.
And he did not want a life in which he was going to be on the run without Fezco. Fezco getting locked up, where is he going to go? With Faye? What the fuck Faye going to do? She can't even boil water. Okay, so I totally understand this reaction from him. I totally be like, he's like, you know, I'm not going to let you go down for this. Even though Fezco is going to go down anyway. Like,
yeah.
Because while maybe Ashtray did the actual stabbing, like, Fez surely finished him off. So I just, it was sad. I think the saddest part about it was, you know, the moment where he realizes that it's over, he's going to be killed. And Fez has to sit there and watch the entire thing go down. Yeah. But there was no other way for this to end other than this. It just is what it is. You know, it just, what do you
If anything, they're lucky that the officers didn't execute Fez and Faye right then and there after Ashtray took one of them down. Because, right. I mean, they're not above that. So, I mean, at this point, only Ashtray, you know, dying in this raid.
Yeah,
is
I'd say we're two up.
Probably best case scenario, honestly. And it's just, it's sad that somebody so young just, you know, made the decisions that they made and felt like this was the only course. You know what I'm saying? Like, because the mom's right. What was the other recourse? What's going to happen to the grandma now? Like, what if Fez was going to go to prison? He was probably going to go to prison no matter what, too. You know, so, but I still would like a little bit more character, motivation as to why just like we're just like the cops is getting it. Like, you're mad at the cops?
Yeah.
I will say the
cinematography parallel that somebody pointed out on Twitter today did get me, because we see, you know, there's a scene, I think it's in episode one or two, when we get, you know, Ashtray's backstory and the grandma's backstory, where he walks down the hall, Fez walks down the hall, and he finds just Ashtray like laying on his side as a baby, like just showed up.
No.
And then you literally, it's the same thing this time. But yeah.
I'm sitting here being like, you could go to juvie, you know, my privilege is showing that like,
I mean,
you
okay,
know,
I mean,
we do need prison reform, but
that's
like,
a good,
you know,
that's a good point though, Grace. I mean, if he had just listened to Fezco, if they had just got on the ground, put, you know, their hands behind their back, yes, there's a world in which he just spends the rest of his life behind bars. You know what I mean? But that's mm-hmm. still pretty much the end of your life, because I mean, or even if it goes that far, because he could, I mean, you know, they don't really put, you don't really put kids on death row. So yeah, he would have right. at most, he would have gotten maybe, let's say,
9 years.
Maybe.
I told my husband, I was like, I don't know about this plan. If it's possible, let Ashtray take it. Because if he's 12, they normally, juveniles, if it's a severe enough crime, they'll hold you till you're 21 and then like reevaluate depending on the state. So I was like, 9 years versus maybe, it's not, it's still California, so he wouldn't get death. But life for Fezco, I was just like, I was especially like,
if Fez is trying to cover for him and Fez is trying to say, oh, I did it. I killed Mouse. I killed Custer. Yeah. It was all me. Like,
I was also thinking, Ashtray's
mind though, he'll go to prison for, because he's, you know, he's still leading this whole thing. Whereas if Ashtray is not committed, he's not charged with murder. He started with like helping, you know, accessory to murder, and his sentence would be not be hopefully that long to the point where like he could get us start a new life. But like in Ashtray, this is all Ashtray has. You're right, Amon. And it, you know, he's in the space where like, yeah, it's all he. His instinct is to shoot. His instinct is to hit somebody in the head with a hammer.
Yeah,
you know, I do think the it's a little bit messy. Does Ashtray shoot first, and why does he shoot out the you're most likely to hit your brother there, right? In the bathtub. It's the one thing that he shoots. It's the one piece of like logic that I'm like, don't you know that you're for sure going to cause your brother to die, which doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. But to me, I was like, you're putting your brother in the line of like, you are not going to be in the line of fire.
Yeah.
Your brother's going to get shot, which just gets shot and he doesn't die. But
anyway. Once again, he's 12.
He is 12.
And
he is
12.
That executive function.
That's
not working.
Stressful situation.
The only thing I can see possibly happening if we want to try and book a fairy tale ending here is Fez has to flip on Lori and maybe get less time. I think that's the only way. I'm still pissed that nobody went along with Faze. Like, she was talking, I was like, more chime in, y'all. Blame it on Lori.
Like, send the message to Ash. Like, get them, like, don't say anything.
Custer was flustered as fuck when she did that. He was, I didn't say that. Shut up. Like,
so Faye came through. Well, that's kind of that. We have another wrap up to a storyline that involves a gun. So Nate is driving somewhere. He's loading the gun. He ends up at one of Cal's real estate locations, and he finds him with a bunch of people. Nate awkwardly hugs his dad. Starts talking about how, like, you know, we both get off on hurting each other. We're very similar people. He's asking Cal if he's happier. Cal eventually says, "Yes, in some ways, I am happier." Nate's saying, "That's not fair. That you ruined our lives, and then you just get to leave." And then he reveals. So, I mean, I certainly thought last week's episode was telling us that Cal abused Nate. I think this episode says, no, that's not what happened. He says, I saw the tapes when I was 11, and it caused me to have nightmares where I envisioned you doing that to me. The same thing you did to people in the tapes, envision you doing that to me. Cal kicks everyone out, and he tries to apologize, but Nate doesn't want to hear it. So I thought there was more to this that we were going to get. We don't really get more in terms of like why Nate is as messed up. Like, it is bad that he watched his dad in a bunch of videos. I think, Damon, you've said this before. It's like, it doesn't feel as bad to describe Nate's behavior as it does.
What did your daddy do to you that he did? Like, I'm still trying to understand what was so horrible that Cal did to Nate for Nate to be like this. Now, one can make the argument that, yes, finding videos of your daddy screwing other people maybe isn't the healthiest material for you to be consuming at such a young age. I can understand that. But at the same time, that shit was under lock and key, okay? You went searching for it, you found it, and then you started having nightmares of your dad having sex with you. I'm trying to understand. Okay. I'm trying not to victim blame here. I'm really trying.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, yes, Cal is cheating on your mom. He's stepping out on the marriage and he's having these sexual liaisons with strangers. That is damaging. But is it damaging to the point where you want him, like you like that? Like, it just feels like the way that he describes his dad, he feels as if like his dad like personally hurt him, did something to him. Like, and it feels, I can understand being angry with your dad for cheating on your mom and all of that. I can understand that. I get that. But it just, like, the reaction that he's exhibiting here and then sending his dad to jail for what exactly? Was it for the Rue tape?
So
is that what we're supposed to believe? Because he had sex with Rue when she was 17?
Jules.
Jules, excuse me.
I think it has all of the tapes on it, I think, is when he says everything. I don't know whether he means actually everything or if it's like metaphorical, like everything that's going to take you down, Dad. I don't know. I think the Jules one has been the most like,
right,
you know, Daniel. I'm going to send you to Dad, to prison.
So yeah, because we're led to believe that that's like the only time that he has done something with someone underage, right? Like that's what's implied, because like he's like, I didn't know that she was 17, and then they never, like, he's seen all the other tapes and he never says anything about like, oh, you were having sex with all these kids. He just says you were having sex with all these prostitutes, which, I, you know, in the state of California is still illegal. So like, if you have evidence of that, yeah, sure, you can send someone to prison for that. But it just still feels, it's like, so you saw picture, you saw videos of your dad screwing around with people when you were like 12 years old, and now you're just mad about it for the rest of your life. It's just, I feel like I'm missing something still. And I just don't get the animosity.
I literally wrote down, what is he getting arrested for? Like, I really wanted to know. I was like, is it just for soliciting prostitution? Like, Nate make a copy of the Jules video, and that whole giving her the CD was symbolic. You know,
I think 100%. And like, again, it like frustrates me to know that, like, again, there's so much of the stuff here where, like, I don't know. I guess Nate is not supposed to, he's never going to be someone who we like sympathize with. And yet it kind of feels like the show wants us to sympathize with him in some ways. I just feel like it's very strange for me to sit here and be like, this would be cleaner, would be a simpler story and a better told story if Cal's dad was abusing Nate. It is so much easier to like, it feels like the outcome of the story.
Cal was abusing Nate.
Yes, because Cal is supposed to be, Cal is, you know, the bad guy. You know,
I guess
maybe not. Maybe because they also want the story of, like, they did the flashback to Cal episode, right, where they're just like, he just had, you know, he could have been with Derek. He could have lived his life, and he had to repress it. Like, society made him repress it, and so he's fine. And yet also, like, it's just very messy, and I can't quite figure it out.
Maybe we're overthinking it. Maybe it's literally just he's mad because he knows that his dad is living a double life, and now that he, like, because he stole the tape, right? And I think maybe we're supposed to believe that Cal knew that Nate knew, and what, like, Cal finding out that he screwed around with Jules was not even the first time that Cal had an inkling that Nate knew, and so in response
he doesn't even need to abuse Nate, because there could be, if there's more to Cal's doing bad, then that is just better than what they've like set up. I get, like, he sleeps with someone who's underage. He also asks her what her age is, and she says, so in the tape. So, like, I know that it's still illegal for what he did. It's very messy and it's very complicated. Yeah.
Made Cal kind of sympathetic in this,
right,
even in this moment, because as Nate is trying to, it feels like Nate's trying to poke him, but he's just kind of like, you know, I'm happy. He apologizes. Yeah. He says, I regret doing to you, you know, in the family. Like, Cal is actually seems remorseful here and is apologizing profusely to Nate. And it's just kind of like, so it makes you as a viewer who knows his backstory, that, you know, he forced himself into this box that he clearly did not fit in.
Yeah.
And he's now living, I guess what you can say is his best life. And now he's actually taking, like, he's taking ownership of messing up his family to Nate, and then Nate sends him to jail, and then we don't even know what he's going to jail for. It's just not good. I don't know if I want to say it's not good writing, but it's just like, what am I supposed to feel here? As like, this is horrible.
I don't know whether everybody on the show, like, because what I think the show does well in other places is to show that people are not good or bad all of the time.
Okay.
Rue is an addict who has made bad choices, who messes up a lot and affects the people around her. Lexi puts on a play that outs her whole family. We know the struggles that, like, Cassie has with men and why she ends up choosing to be with Nate. And that explains a lot of Cassie. Like, I feel like the show actually does a pretty good job of being like, nobody is inherently good or inherently bad. And then I feel like they're trying to put that same lens on everything with Nate and Cal. Like, if you, like, doesn't this whole thing work better? Like, because he it feels like he has somewhat of a, I mean, he had just put a gun to Maddie's head. And then he goes to Jules and says, here, have the tape. I just want you to have it. Here, go. Like, you're good. And there's no other copies. Well, there is another copy. He made another copy. And so, I don't know. I can't tell if the show wants us to sympathize with Nate at all, because I feel like every character on the show, they are trying to make us sympathize with them. Fezco is a drug dealer who is also super, like, nice to Lexi, you know?
It just doesn't make much sense. It just doesn't make much sense, Mr. Levinson. We're trying to follow along, and we're just at a loss for words. Like,
that part.
And Nate is like, oh, you ruined all of our lives. Like, when and how? Because, like, once again, yes, seeing your dad screwing around with other people, yes, that's damaging. But I don't know if it's warrant you sending your dad to jail. Like, I don't know if I'm like, maybe, I'm pissed off at you. So when was your life ruined? Was it ruined when you saw the tapes? Was it ruined when he had that whole come to Jesus moment and peed on the foyer floor and then, you know, outed all of your dirty little secrets and then left because he was just trying to say, we're all living double lives in this house and I'm just kind of tired of it. I'm not the only one. I know you got secrets. I know you got secrets. I know you got secrets. So let's just all just be open and honest about them. To which your mom definitely did, because then she was having like a whole like come to Jesus moment with you in the kitchen the episode later. So it's like, so was that the life ruining moment for you? Like, you're mad that he was honest about everything eventually? It's not even just your mom, the cow, that feels that way about you, Nate. Your mom also feels the same way, which, like, you're just such an angry person. Like, you're really messed up. I don't know why you're like that. Like,
I have locked into why this makes me mad. Why? So Cal can absolutely go to jail for sleeping with someone who's underage. He can absolutely do that.
Mm-hmm.
Nate being the one who gets the, like, gotcha, like, you're going to jail, instead of the actual underage trans woman who he sleeps with. Again, the show that did such a good job of representing trans people has totally dropped the ball this season, to the point where, like, can't that be it? Can't you have Nate can have this moment where he gets mad at his dad. He has a gun. He's like, I hate you. I'm so mad at you. You have to, whatever. Don't let him be the one who's like, also, I have the USB and you're going to jail. Let Jules be like, this is a thing that has happened that's bad and he should go to jail. You know, I just, maybe that's not perfect. Maybe that's not perfect. But in this whole thing about a situation where a grown man slept with a trans woman who's underage, we get nothing from the trans woman. Mm-hmm. We saw her, like, destroy the tape last week. That is it. She is not involved in this storyline whatsoever here. And maybe I'm just keying into something for me personally that I'm feeling like, okay, there is a little bit here that maybe I'm, like, understanding why I'm, like, frustrated with the who they're choosing to tell these stories about.
I did remember in season one, you know, Nate and Cal did have that really big fight. So Cal seems to not have shied away from, like, hitting Nate and stuff like that. So that could be one part of it, you know, because he was repressing his own feelings. He took it out on his family by being angry and all that. Mm-hmm. That could be it. But I just feel like a stupid wrestling fan right now. It's like, tell me who I need to root for and tell me who's the bad guy.
Well, again, I just think that, like,
not here.
Cal, who is a guy that I say, he can go to jail. He slept with an underage person. He can go to jail. is someone who they have made us sympathize with in the show. They have chosen to film something, and whether this is like Sam Levinson's, like, you idiots, you sympathize with him, like, that's not the point. Like, you know, whatever, they did film it in a way to make him sympathetic, and yet I feel like they're kind of trying to do it with Nate, but also it feels like he is like the worst person on the show.
He's horrible. So, like, I mean, he choked Maddie out in season one. Then that's a smooth aggravated assault charge, which he did to her bedroom in this past season, like playing Russian roulette with her. Like, I don't know, man. I just, and like, he, once again, I have never walked in and found a slew of sexual material involving my parents. So pray to God to find that. Like, so I'm underestimating the amount of like developmental damage trauma, that can do to one's psyche at such a young age, and how that sort of like feeling of never having a real connection with your father, because you know that he's hiding something, and maybe he knows that you know that he's hiding something, and so like there's this really, there's like, he's like warring with you ever since you're like really, really small. So maybe I'm underestimating all of that, but it does, like you said, Grace, it just feels so hard to want to be like, yeah, Team Nate here, because that whole family can go as far as I'm concerned. Like, y'all are all just like, y'all gotta go. Like, and I'm tired of the Jacob saga. I'm tired of it. Like, how Star Wars fans are sick of the Skywalkers, I'm sick of the Jacobs. Okay, they can go.
Equal families, the Skywalkers.
Yeah, and it's amazing to me that we talk that much about a segment that I truly could, if we're talking about segments that could have been left out of this finale, this could have been the one.
Why did
this
you bring right a gun, here? Nate? The cops are coming. You is yeah, such you a dumb a idiot. You're
why
so
did he
dumb.
Load it too. Like, what was that? What the?
I'm whatever. Exactly. We're done. We're moving on. No more Jacobs ever. We do get to, I did see a lot of love for this online, that we get to finally see the full speech, Rue's speech at her the eulogy she gives for her dad. We get this intermixed because we kind of like are jumping back to the play, like Lexi's relationship with her father. She sees him in the hospital. She also goes and sees Rue in the hospital. Suze tells Lexi that her whole life has, she's been forced to take care of everyone. And we get more of Rue's speech. And, what if the reason it felt like a movie was because losing you was part of a larger story, one that I could still shape? That moment we see Fezco getting arrested, and then we cut back and we see Luna saying the speech on stage. What did you think? I saw a lot of people really love the Rue and Lexi stuff in this. I was a little like, I feel like we've heard the speech a lot. I feel like he really loved this. I loved it. I loved the line of like, I'll see, you know, when I close my eyes, I'll see you again. Mm-hmm. I think it's a lot. It's like basically like 3-4 episodes we've seen like the funeral stuff, which it is powerful. I feel like this is how we're ending it. I don't know. I was
kind of confused. I'm like, how do we go from Hallie gyrating on the pony back to a Rue / Luna's dad's funeral? Like it made me want to know what the play was.
Yeah.
Like what the play sequencing and arc was, because I'm confused.
Yeah, similarly to like how we're like done with Cassie and Maddie, the play is kind of done with Cassie and Maddie too, so we don't need any more scenes.
It was that was another complaint that I saw continuously, is like, what's in the play, what's not, like what's this order of everything, like what's going on, like I don't understand. It's just a series of vignettes, they just hop all over the timeline, like what's going on. So yeah, I totally agree. But yeah, I mean, as far as the funeral scenes are concerned, I mean, I guess they give us a little bit more each and every time. You know what I mean? Like we get to see Lexi and Rue in the in her bedroom last episode. This time we get to sort of see the aftermath when Rue comes outside with the rest of the girls. So you know, it gets fleshed out more and more. It's sort of the one thing I do enjoy about the culmination of all of those scenes is that we get to see how many people are actually there, just so that it just reinforces these girls have been friends for quite some time. Because I think in the first scene you just see Lexi, and then as it goes on, then you see Lexi, and of course Leslie is there, of course Gia is there, and then all these people, and then I think we're finally seeing that Maddie was there as well. So that was the one thing that I did like, was that it did build upon the relationships.
Yeah
I agree.
Rue calls Lexi the day after the play, Is this weird? No Fezco talk. You don't know about Fezco yet? I don't know. Anyway, she tells her the play was great. Lexi says she was just going to hang in bed all day, so Rue asks if she can come over. They both kind of smile. It's nice. You know, they're going to be friends. At the funeral, Rue does go outside. She sits with the girls. Suze comes out and takes the picture. They're talking about the play. She says, "This is the play was the first time I was ever able to look at myself and not hate myself." She says she's been through a lot and doesn't know what to do it. Lexi made a play. Rue doesn't know how to do that, how to take the like feeling she's feeling and like not just sit and be angry. She says that seeing the play meant the world to her. Lexi asks Rue if Rue thinks about her father often. They nod. She says she feels like she still had so much to learn from him, and she's very angry about that. Rue asks if Lexi ever gets angry at her dad. She says, "It's more complicated than that. I was relieved when he left, but now I worry every time the phone rings." Oh. And I think this stuff is I think this stuff is really, really good here, where Rue's basically saying, like, I would get mad when people told me, like, my dad died for a reason. I would get so mad. Like, that was unfair. We saw that in the one of the Christmas specials last year. That whole thing comes up a lot. But she thinks what they're saying is that you have to give it a reason because you don't want to hold on to that forever. Rue promises that it's not all Lexi's dad's fault. She thinks her dad probably thinks of he's going to get better for Lexi, which is also kind of the problem. He only wants to be better for Lexi because he loves Lexi more than he loves himself. They hug. Mm. I thought this was really good. I thought this was like a beautiful scene. It says so much about like addiction and grief and you know, all of these like themes that I think the show hits perfectly. I thought that this was really good. This idea that like, yeah, the problem is that like it's going to be hard for him to get better because he doesn't love himself as much as like he actually loves you a lot, but like if he doesn't love himself, you know, quote RuPaul, how the hell you love somebody else? You can't love, you know. So, you know, etc., etc. So I don't know. I just thought this scene was really great. I'm a little confused where it happens in the timeline, but
yeah, because then we
see it at the play. They're talking about the play, and then the play closes. They're hugging, and it's like, "I really miss you." The play closes, but weren't they at the beginning of the scene talking about the play? I don't understand.
Yeah, it's fine. I just assumed it was a different time, maybe.
I did too, but at the beginning of the scene, she's like, you know, the play was the first time I didn't hate myself.
No, I think that was after the play, but I think what was on the stage of the play might have just been another time of them commiserating like that, like saying that they, anyway, this is what they do, that's their pattern, they sit in front of her ugly couch. And
there's things I'm much more upset about, so like I'm, yeah, well, it's fine, but you know.
I kind of just like thought that it was just like sort of like how Lexi interprets her life. You know what I mean? She's a very cinematically drawn person, theatrical person. So I just felt, yeah, it definitely was not included in the play. It was just like, if it were, this is how it would look, because that's how Lexi interprets
You think it wasn't even in the play?
No, I don't think it was. I think that the conversation took place after the play, the way that we saw it. And I think that that was just like Lexi's mind at work again. Thinking about how it would look.
Wow.
Yeah.
Art.
Time travel. I thought this was really good. The one critique I've seen of this scene is Rue saying, like, you know, I've struggled with this anger so much, you know, but you figured it out. You made something. You made this play. And again, this critique of like the show, again, has characters who make bad decisions. Does not mean they are bad people, but they make bad decisions. And Lexi does make a pretty bad decision to make this play. It like, it's like, it's pretty bad. And so there's never that in this season, just never, you know, at the end of this episode, it's not like Lexi kind of messed up. You know, we get one character say like, "That was great. That was really good." You know? And for Rue, it was really good. I really did like, I thought like Zendaya just like leaning back, like crying tears, watching like herself on stage. It was really beautiful. It was really nice. And like, I like the sentiment that like, yeah, I kind of got to watch that. Like, I'm not a bad person. I feel like, you know, I've made a lot of shitty decisions. I have to say a lot of I'm sorries, you know, I've been doing bad stuff. And so it's nice for someone to see me not as a bad person. I like all that, but I would agree with the take that like Lexi probably has someone to be like, "Lexi, what were you doing? That was a bad idea. You're really messed up. Cassie's in a bad spot." You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I really did enjoy this this scene between the two of them, though, because I feel like they both say things that the other really, really needed to hear at that point in time, especially, you know, what Rue tells Lexi about how, I'm sure your dad, like, take it from me, like, your dad still loves you. He just hasn't found the strength to love himself yet. And I think that Rue really gets, maybe not necessarily so much in this conversation, but from just watching the play, finally got what it was like to be friends with herself. Like,
yeah,
look at what you're doing. Look at just how much other people's lives are affected by not only your actions, but your actions in combination with whatever they're already going through and how you're not really helping things. Like, it was just like a whole bunch. And I love that Rue made that point of like, you have something that I don't have. You have something that I use drugs to sort of feel. Like, you are able to take all of your pain and your trauma and put it into something that isn't as destructive. Now, sure, maybe Cassie got her ass beat.
Yeah.
Maybe there was a couple of fights and a couple broken nails and stuff like that. But it's a hell of a lot better than me putting all of this nasty shit into my body. And so I love that. And I hope that that's like the beginning. Not necessarily rock bottom, because I know we don't really like that term so much over here, but that's like a moment of lucidity where you're like, there's other ways for me to do this. I just watched my friend who's been through hell and back like I have deal with this in a much healthier manner. So there must be a way. Maybe it's not playwriting, but there must be a way for me to be able to handle this trauma.
Season 3 is going to be about Rue's play.
The whole season.
Yeah. No, I love that. I love it. Again, I've talked a lot. You know, what I love about this moment between Lexi and Rue is what I've talked a lot about on the show about, you know, the Gia-ness of it. That's the situation that I feel like I can relate the most about being a sibling of somebody who is dealing with addiction. And there is this moment, I think you're right, when like Rue is watching herself on stage, you very easily, Rue, you know, if Rue's in a worse spot in her life, She's gonna walk out like Cassie and Nate walk out, right? Like, Lexi is saying some stuff on stage. It's like, I'm not really sure I wanted to say that I was Rue's friend. You know, that's basically what she says earlier in the play. She says some stuff that's like hard truth for Rue. And Rue's just like kind of in this place that she can take it and see it and like understand it. And that's like exactly the thing that you, when you are trying to like express to somebody who is like, is causing pain in your life because of the choices that they're making, even though I can empathize with why they are making those choices, they are still making choices that are causing me and, you know, my other family members to like struggle. I want to be able to say it and for them to sit and be able to like reflect on it, you know, and not just like, because what often happens is like they storm out or they're mad, you know. And so that is a really beautiful moment, I think, that Rue and Lexi get to have, and I think you articulated why it's really well done there. We do see the rest of the girls in the bathroom. They're hanging around, they're tending to their wounds, Cassie says,
one of them is that little small little scratch that Maddie got. I'm like, you're fine, girl.
Cassie says that, you know, it's funny, Nate broke up with me before I even went on stage, and Maddie looks her right in the eye and says, well, don't worry, this is just the beginning.
This is supposed to be resolve, right? We're supposed to let to believe, maybe if it's not all, you know, fixed, this is supposed to be like Maddie and Cassie finally come back together and be like, wow.
Yeah.
We just went through some shit together over this dumbass bitch. Let's never do that again. Like, that's sort of like what I got in the subtext of all of that, hopefully. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little bit too hopeful.
What do you think, Mari? Are we starting season 3? Are they friends? Are they frenemies? Are they? Yeah.
That's a great question, because I felt like that was a warning. Maddie's like, yeah, get used to it, sweetie.
If you're going to pick him. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, if you're going to pick him, then this is what you're going to be in for. Now, I don't think she meant like, I'm going to continue.
I'm going to beat your ass every step of the way. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she meant, this is him. This is what he does. I'm not shocked.
True.
Type of deal. That's what I, that's
and,
I,
and yeah. Also like, he broke up with me. It's like, yeah, he broke up with me too. You know, like, you know, he kind of does that sometimes, you know. I think it's interesting. I read it a bit as like, I did read it, I think, mostly as like, yeah, Nate is now like a thing in your life that is going to suck. But I did also kind of read it as like, the dust has settled a bit on Cassie and Maddie.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it makes the line that Cassie has there and saying, you don't want to know what's funny. Like it leads me to believe that a conversation had taken place before then. They had finally calmed down. They all just sort of like, you know, Maddie beat her down and they just were like, okay, I'm tired. You want to talk? Like, let's finally talk about this. And so, yeah, I'm hoping that means that there is like a beginning of, you know, of mending this, because like, yeah. Look, like he, like the guy sucks. He
truly
sucks. Please move on from him. Please move on from him. You know what? And then you know what? Next season is going to be Kat.
Oh my God. No, BB. What about BB? The other girl who sometimes that was hangs hilarious. Around. we do pan from like Cassie and it does go over Kat. And as we pan around from Kat, that's a wrap on Kat's storyline for the season.
Yeah, that's
it. You're being Maddie's friend, I guess. Yeah, that's it. All right.
Sad. Yeah. 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 I mean, I do think so. I do think they're like cordial and civil now, but how can they? I don't know if they can be friends if Cassie is really going to continue it with Nate. You know what I'm saying? Like, not friends. At least not as close as they used to be.
They both need to like dump him, you know, leave him in the dust and move on with their lives. Yeah. And then they can be friends, but not if any of them are like, I'm going to check out Nate again. Friendship done. Yeah.
So clearly, when Kat said she didn't like the storyline, Sam Levinson was like, okay, no storyline for you at all. I'm not going to rewrite this. I'm just taking it out and
pulling it right out, which sucks. Dang, that sucks. Episode in the first episode, when we get the scene of all the women popping up, being like, you got to love yourself. I thought that was going to be like brilliant commentary. I thought it was going to be so good. And we just get nothing, which is too bad.
So do you think that leads credence into like the whole she's possibly going to have an eating disorder storyline?
Oh, is that I didn't see that, but that makes sense.
That's what I heard. I don't know. Allegedly, I heard that was the storyline that it was about to go in that she didn't agree with. Now, I could be wrong. But from what I understand, people are saying like, it's typical. It truly is typical of the big friend character to have an eating disorder. When season one, it was kind of like a storyline we had never seen.
Her body.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if Barbie Ferrer was like, don't make me do an eating disorder thing, and you can choose between, you know, and Sam's like, you're either will have one or you're like, storyline won't be in the show. And she was like, I'm not going to be in the show then. Like, more power to her. She showed up on a TV show I watched the After Party. She plays a one episode role in that. So she's getting
that was good. So. I gotta watch.
Very fun. Check out the coverage on Post Recaps. So we get our final scene. Jules walks over to Rue. I want any Jules content in the episode I can get, but also like she did just watch a play about her whole, like a lot of her trauma. So maybe it wasn't the best time to come over. I guess to say, I love you. I get, you know, I miss you. I want to support you. It's fine. Rue does not respond. She just gives Jules a kiss on the forehead. She walks out and Rue says, Jules was her first love. Maybe she wasn't, she was too high for most of it. Maybe that's not true. Rue says she stayed clean through the rest of the year. It was just easier that way. And she doesn't know this feeling will last forever, but she's trying. Ollie told her one time, the thought of maybe being a good person is what keeps me trying to be a good person. And maybe there's something to that. And that is where we end the episode. I love this little, when I first watched it, I was a little annoyed. I was like, that's it for between Rue and Jules? That's all we get? I was like, oh, it's like an hour episode, but it must be like an hour 15 because we're going to get into the Rue and Jules. Kisses her on the forehead and leaves, and that's it. But on rewatching it, I did really like, I think that this little line here, this like the last line of like, maybe the thought of being a good person can keep me from being a good person. Again, I think it's like really, really strong. It's a really good ending. The music choice they play here at the end is really good. So I'm upset that Jules, that's just all Jules gets in this entire episode. But I thought from a Rue, if I'm like, Rue is the main character of the show, I thought this was really strong.
Mm. Yeah. And we get that they say that they reveal that she stays clean for the rest of the year. So I'm kind of like,
leads me to believe to a time jump.
Time jump. Turn. Yeah. 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 And no. It also leads me to believe that Lori did not yank her up in this year. What is happening? Which of course,
like,
I'm not,
you got a part-time job, sis. Like, you working at Dunkin' or something? Because
maybe she doesn't know where to find Rue.
Oh, she knows where to find Rue. She knows where to find Rue.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Well, I don't know. You know, I don't know. I can't explain why Lori doesn't go. I don't know. Lori's weird duck, you know?
I know. So, I don't know why I'm still stuck on that. But it's definitely a very interesting ending. It's just, I don't know. I don't know if I can properly equate this, but it's kind of like the antithesis of Insecure, because with Insecure going in the finale, we had all these storylines, and then in the finale they like literally wrapped them all up in a little bow to the point where people were like, that was kind of like too neat and right. too pretty
right.
and okay, we're just gonna skip over all of the hard stuff and just say they live happily ever after. Well, this one, it was like they just left all the storylines just hanging around flopping to the point where we're just kind of like, well, what's going on here, girl? Like, at least most of them. So yeah, it truly is interesting, and it just kind of sucks because 2 years, and then it's like, what are we going to feel like in 2 years? Are these characters going to resonate? Is the backstage drama going to affect what we're seeing on our screen, like it feels like it did this season? And then my last and final question is, if we didn't know anything about the behind the scenes stuff from this season, do you think we would have enjoyed this season more, or was it always something that was lingering in our heads, you know?
What do you think, Kimon?
I mean, I think that the getting a lot more of the backstories of all these characters really did help just, you know, flesh them out a bit more. And, you know, it helped us understand why they behave the way that they do. It made everybody feel the loss of Ashtray so much more, because I feel like if he had died knowing what we knew about him in season one, I mean, I think it would have been sad, because it's not really easy watching any child get killed on television. But I think, you know, it just made it all the more meaningful, you know, when you realize just how the little family came to be. So I do think that while the ending definitely was not the greatest, the journey was definitely a lot of fun, as much as it was anxiety inducing. So I do wonder how they're going to pick this up. I mean, I think they're trying to get as much mileage out of Lori's character as they can. She will definitely be back in season three. People responded to that actress very, very well, because everyone was creeped out by Lori. So she'll be back. I guess we just have to see, you know, like, but it does make you wonder, if she's going to be back, then it's like, okay, what's the time jump going to be like? Are we going to be in 2024 when this show premiered in 2019? We're still led to believe that all these people are still in school. Like, it's been 5 years. It has been 5 years. So I'm just like, I do wonder about that a lot. So yeah, we'll see. But yeah. I think the season definitely, it helped us. I think it's still catching its stride. You know, it definitely did not hit a sophomore season slump. I think this season definitely gained a lot more viewers, and there was just so much. It was the number one tweeted show still. So people,
yeah, like my trending topics last night were like Euphoria, Ashtray, Rue, and Fezco. I mean, it's a very popular show. I do, you know, I think for sure it will come back for another season. You know, I think I kind of feel like it hit the sophomore slump. I do feel a little bit like, I feel like, you know, if you look back at the season one, it feels very complete. And I feel like, you know, you asked about, like, you know, knowing the backstage-ness of it all. Like, does it impact, you know, if we didn't know that stuff, would we feel differently about the show? I kind of hope not. I kind of feel like when, like, Barbie Ferreira, when Kat is like does not have a storyline after having one in season one, hope we could be like, oh, that's disappointing. When Jules, the character that I love the most on the show, has the basically no storyline that is centered around Jules, I'm kind of like, oh, that sucks. And centered, or at least in season one, it was like a shared storyline with Rue, you know?
Yeah.
It was about like their relationship, and I really loved it. And so I feel like in my head, it feels like Sam Levinson, off the success of season one, got a lot more freedom to do what he wanted to do with the show. And he has his little sandbox, and he wanted to do what he wanted to do. And there were pieces of the story that I think we as viewers really were attached to in season one, that he was not really interested in talking about in season two. And, you know, that's his right as the person who created the show and to do it. But I'm like disappointed by the season. And I think through the first half of the season, I felt like they were setting up a lot of stuff that I was actually quite excited. You know, when Ruth steals the suitcase, I'm like, wow, that feels like a lot for this like little high school drama show, but also like, okay, let's see what happens. And I feel like it just, he liked to set up these moments that he didn't know how to pay off. He wanted these, he wanted to kind of set things up in a way where he could have this like bit of writing that he really liked or a line or whatever. Like he loved the funeral eulogy scene. Right. And I just, I don't know. It felt like he like clung on to certain things that like, I don't know. He kind of maybe got in his own head in some ways. I think that there's enough, even in this finale episode, that I really, really loved, that I will be very excited about to chat about come season three, because there is some like genuinely beautiful, well-written stuff in here. So
it very much feels like Star Wars episode 7 versus Star Wars episode 8. It's like you set up all of these storylines that we thought, like we spent years fan theory, and then you come in back in episode 8 is like, oh, forget all of that. we're just like, that's what the midpoint of this season felt like. It's like all that stuff we hyped you up for. Yeah, it's gone. Who cares?
Big difference, though. It's the same showrunner, so I'm not sure what happened.
Exactly. Like, what happened? Yeah.
Well, we will get into a lot more. And actually, if you have feedback for us, we would love that. Because while Euphoria may be done airing on HBO every Sunday, we are not done podcasting about Euphoria. Because we are going to do one more podcast. We're going to do a feedback show, a recap. We're going to look back. We'll look back and maybe also look forward like we're doing today. We are going to be joined by the wonderful Purple Pants Badass, Bryce Isaiah, to do a recap / feedback show. If you have feedback for us, you can tweet at us. You can email euphoria@postshowrecaps.com. We can get your feedback there. Amon, do you want people to send you feedback for next week?
Sure. Yeah, of course. You can send me in my Twitter DMs. That okay. works.
I will take it as well. I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace. So we'll be back next week. But Amari, thanks so much for joining us this week. Where can people find you? What are you up to? I know.
Of course, you can find me on the Wrestling Wrap Up podcast every week, where me and Matt Scott break down the highlights of the week in the world of professional wrestling. You can find me on Twitter at Mari Talks Too Much. That's too like the number two. And just follow me there because you'll get all the updates on what I'm working on. Looking forward to BB Canteen coming back, you know, working on some new podcasts. So just go and follow me on Twitter so you know what's going on with me.
What about you, Amon?
You can follow me everywhere. I'm on Adwin. Drag Race is still in full swing. I had to take a hiatus this past week, finishing up my birthday weekend. Yay! But make sure that you check out Liana and Beth over there. On Post Your Recaps. It's not Post Your Recaps. Check us out here on Post Your Recaps. Check us out over there at RHP for Hap Ups. And then I still have my podcast with Matt Liguori over at the Choir Room, talking about all things Glee. And Big Brother Canada 10 is revving on up. So at this point, while this is released, the Big Brother Canada 10 draft will be well underway. So make sure that you check us out over there. So
yes.
Yep.
I am on Twitter at Hi From Grace, and Twitch at Hi From Grace. I am doing some more work here on Post Show Recaps weekly movie coverage. We will be covering Drive My Car, the Japanese film that's nominated for Best Picture that drops on HBO Max, I believe.
Maybe this week. Won't you drive my car?
Yeah, it's based on the Beatles song. We're covering that this week as well. I'm not done with HBO Sunday nights. I'm not done. I will be here. postrecaps.com/HBO pod if you want all the HBO stuff we're doing, because next week the premiere episode of the HBO show Winning Time will be releasing, which is about the Lakers in the 1980s. I will be joined. Jason Reed will be my co-host for that. Yay. And we will be recapping those episodes all along the way. So yeah, I'm not done with HBO on Sunday nights. Lots of other stuff, but if you want to check it out, you can follow me on Twitter. Until we are back in your feed with a recap feedback show, that's all. Goodbye.